Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Memories have the power to move us, often when we least expect it. But how much do we know about the complex process behind this vital part of our lives? In a new book, practicing psychiatrist Professor Veronica O'Keen sheds some light on questions like, why do we lose some memories and not others? And are there such things as true and false memories? Professor O'Keen, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Claire.
You say that memory isn't static. It's a never-ending dance with sensation. So when does the dance begin? Is it something that starts at birth?
Well, it probably starts before birth, but essentially the book, what I'm trying to say in the book is that memory is very much a living process, that our memories live with us and are experienced by us in the present moment. And in fact, our brains are formed by memory, by sensation coming into the brain, and are an essential part of the way we build up our brain and see the world and perceive the world as adults. I guess in looking at the brain and how the brain develops, different parts of our memory systems develop at different ages. For example, you mentioned sensation. Well, our sensory brain develops during childhood, and our world is very immediate. Then we see things, we learn to recognize things by shape and color, whereas during early adulthood the emotional aspects of our brain develop in tandem with our reproductive systems, preparing us for adulthood and for parenthood. And then in old age, our more abstract brain develops. So different parts of our brain develop, different areas of memory develop throughout the different stages of life.
Can I ask you why it is? As I was looking at your book, I saw you have a piece on this. But why is it that taste or smell will provoke a memory?
Well, that's a very interesting point. And we all know this, and we're all aware of Proust's great writing on the subject about the immediacy of memory, that when we smell something, we actually feel something before we recognise what the smell is. It's like the smell of cut grass, I think, for a lot of Irish people, will bring us back to childhood parties and summers. So the reason that that happens, and this is how neuroscience can illuminate human experience, and which is what I talk about in the book, is because the smell neurons from our nose go to the emotional center of our brain before they go to the memory center. Now, ultimately, this leads to an experience of an emotion before we actually recognize what it is that we're smelling visually. And so the immediacy and the vivid emotional experiences accompanied by memories is simply because the neurons hit the emotional part of our brain before they hit the memory part of our brain. Other sensory experiences, for example, looking at something, we tend to first recognize it before we feel the associated emotion. So the emotion tends to be more a lingering after experience, after the vision.
Can we decide, perhaps subconsciously, to forget or disregard a memory that is unpleasant or uncomfortable?
We can, but I think an awful lot more is made of that than perhaps exists. And second, I would like to say again, perhaps an unusual take on it, is that it's not always a bad thing to forget about memories. Ultimately, all memories, unless one is traumatized and stuck in a memory, and in the book I use the example of Miss Havisham in Great Expectations, who's literally stuck in time, in place, in a house that's decaying around her and rotting like her memories, in a sense.
In her wedding dress.
That's correct. And the clock, of course, has stopped at the time that she was betrayed by her fiancé. So she's stuck in memory, and that isn't good. So it is actually good to move on from traumatic memories. And one of the functions of our brain actually is to try and put whatever memories we've had into the general network of our memories to allow us to move forward and to understand that experience. So we can, of course, choose to forget, and we will forget because the brain continues to make new memories as we live, and the brain does not go, does not stop simply because we want to forget something. It will continue to process just in the same way that our heart continues to beat. So all events from the present will ultimately be filed and be processed in another part of our brain, which forms the way that we filter the world. So it's a very, very continuous, organic process that goes on throughout one's life. So I would say about, to go back to your question about memory and can we choose to forget, we sometimes choose not to forget, like Ms. Havisham. We sometimes need to forget in order to move on. And in a normal process of memory, apart from trauma, we move forward smoothly, integrating the past into memory, into the present, and we project from memory to imagine and to form and to plan our future in a strategic way. So memory flows from the past, lives in the present, and in a sense allows us to strategically plan for our future.
And I see you say that certain types of memories fade when somebody is suffering from depression. Why is that?
Well, it's very interesting the way psychiatric illness can give us a unique insight into the way normal memory works. And I've used case studies in the book to example that. And one of the most fascinating case studies was a woman whom I call Nora. All these patients are real, but obviously they're given pseudonyms. And Nora had been very depressed for many years. And when she came into hospital, she had switched from depression into a manic state. But we realized sometime after she was in hospital that she'd laid down no memories for several years. And this was because her brain wasn't sufficiently aroused. Her brain was literally depressed. And she wasn't, her brain wasn't charged up enough to form memories. The way we form memories from a neuroscientific point of view is that the neurons individually get charged up and they get connected together. And it's the pattern of connections of the neurons that forms a specific memory. In Nora's case, her neurons weren't fired up adequately to form memories. She was just about awake, responsive, able to eat and dress herself. She actually didn't really communicate with anyone. She was in a very much a shut down state for many years, and she laid down no memories. So this obviously is a very extreme case and the only one I've seen in my many years of clinical practice. But it does demonstrate the point that we need to be aroused to form memories. And of course, if we're sleepy and we can't attend to something, we won't remember it. Similarly, if we're over aroused, the way some of my patients might be in highly manic states, you can't lay down memories either. And the reason that happens is because the neurons are so aroused that they never go back to a resting state to allow the formation of new memories. So really our nervous systems are quite fragile and in quite a delicate balance. And we can't be under-aroused or over-aroused in order to make memories. Another very common example of that would be if an individual, unfortunately, hears very bad news from the doctor, perhaps news of a terminal illness. And we know as medical professionals that individuals don't lay down memories when very extreme news has been broken to them. So we allow for that and tell the patient that they won't remember what we've said, and to we see them again to go through the diagnosis with them. Correct.
Do we know, Veronica, why some people, older people in particular with conditions like dementia, can remember events from 40 years ago but may not be able to remember what happened that day or the day before?
Well, that really is at the core of how our memory works, because there's a memory-making machine at the centre of our brain where all the sensation from the outside world is brought down, and that's called the hippocampus. And that's really like a loom that's spinning neurons and making patterns and creating threads of memory. And all those memories then that are formed in the hippocampus go into integrative centers in the front of the head, in what's called the prefrontal brain. And so we have a little, you know, we have an integrated store of biographical memories there. And we don't know how long it takes to process memories from sensation to this store. But ultimately, that's a much more permanent store of biographical memory. So while the hippocampus will be the most vulnerable part of the brain, if the brain is undergoing a process of dementia or impairment, the prefrontal brain will remain integrated for a much longer period of time. So while you can't form new memories and you lose your short-term memory, ultimately your long-term biographical memories are much less vulnerable to destruction, because that part of the memory system is much more intact
You still have your permanent store there, and that makes perfect sense. Well, it's fascinating to talk to you, and the book is available now. It's called The Rag and Bone Shop: How We Make Memories and Memories Make Us, and it is published by Alan Lane and written by Professor Veronica O'Keen. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Claire.
Today with Claire Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.